A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's UnitedHealthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Emma.
And I'm Gabby, and we're two card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
How's it going? Guys.
How's it going to you?
I'm going well. It's a fucking hot day today, isn't it?
It's the hottest day of... I mean, it's the hottest day of the year, but it feels like the hottest day maybe ever.
Yeah. I didn't know. Do you know what I mean? Do you know when the hottest day of the year is coming? Generally, you know about it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, tomorrow's the hottest day of the year. Blah, blah, blah. And you make plans. I didn't realise. And it hit me, sideswiped me. Yeah. And... I just wasn't really prepared.
My weather app said it's going to be 23 degrees today.
It wasn't 23, was
considerably
it?
Considerably higher than that.
Yeah, it wasn't 23. I had visitors. So yeah. We had visitors that arrived yesterday, stayed overnight, left this morning. Then I had visitors that arrived this afternoon. And, you know, obviously people that come to visit you when you live by the beach, they want to go to the beach.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're just like, guys, this... Even there, they've got a little doggy. And they were like, oh... Poor little Rosie's paws are going to burn. And we were like, okay, we're really trying to do this and it's probably not a good idea.
Yeah, let's just stay home and drink water and ice.
And Verve Clicquot, which is what we did.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, I can drink in this weather. I went for lunch with some very nice people who might be listening. Hi. Hi, guys. And yeah, we didn't drink and I'm really pleased. Because yeah. I feel like I'm not going to die.
Yeah, it was those kind of visitors, though. It was like, you know, you had to kind of offer a drink. And yeah. I'm not the kind of person that just has Verve Clicquot in my fridge, by the way. I did get it as a gift from another visitor.
Right.
Who I think brought it on the chance that they were hoping that she would end up drinking it, but she didn't.
She didn't.
So I had it today instead.
I quite like the idea that you just have Verve Clicquot in your fridge.
Yeah, one of them. No, yeah. Definitely not.
Can I tell you about what I'm doing right now?
Please do.
I just got out of the shower and I'm literally sitting in a towel.
Oh, saucy.
I feel saucy.
Do you feel refreshed though, mainly?
I feel so freaking refreshed.
Yeah, but I'd quite like a shower. That's a good idea.
Actually. Yeah.
Nice, cool shower.
Probably my best idea.
I mean, yeah, okay, well, maybe when I finish this,
yeah,
I could get straight on that, make that happen, action that shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, it's Tuesday. I hope you're all well.
Yeah.
This is obviously, we're speaking on the Sunday.
Yeah, I hope it's cooled down since now.
I kind of do as well, although I don't want it to rain.
No, I don't want it to rain. I just want the temperature to drop by like 5 to 20 degrees.
My mum's visiting from Ireland, so I kind of want, you know, I want good weather.
Oh yeah,
it's going to be a nice trip, but also just yeah, a few degrees lighter than this.
there's a really good Twitter account called No Context Brits, and they tweeted just a picture of a pie chart, and it was British weather, and half was blue and too cold, and half was red and too hot.
Does feel like that right now, doesn't it?
Yeah,
faux show. Yeah. But then we don't remember the days that are just like tepid.
No,
you know, they just disintegrate in our minds.
They do.
These ones stick. Anyway, we do have a show.
We do have a show.
Beyond our taking of the wedding, the weather, you know.
Yeah, we're kicking off with Liz.
Liz. What's Liz talking about? She's answering more questions.
She's answering a tough one this week.
Yeah.
It's a question that's tough. Yeah, it's mental. It's a question that has crossed all our minds, right? It's kind of talking about, you know, it's kind of like, is what's the point? Like, you know, we're trying so hard to create something like a baby that could cause us like a lot of pain, not through being a bastard, but just like, you know, it could make our, the person who writes it makes it like writes it really well. I'm making them sound like they're not very nice, but you know, it's, you know, sometimes, like quite often when I was going through infertility, someone would go, oh, well, you know, there are too many people in the world anyway. So, and I'd be like, fuck off. But it's that kind of big question.
Why is
doing this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, God, it's a big question. Jesus, fuck.
Yeah. And Liz answers very well.
She's
very wisely.
Masterful at these things. She is quite masterful.
She's just a wise owl.
She is a very wise owl.
Then we've got an interview with the very lovely Dr. Belinda Coker.
Yes, and she is the founder of Your Trusted Squad, guys. Your Trusted Squad.
She was very honest.
She was really graceful about it.
Yeah.
You know, she was. You could get really impassioned about it, but she was very pragmatic. But yeah, she's a very clever lady. So we hope you enjoyed listening to it.
Yeah. My favourite bit is you just fangirling about her business name.
I mean, you can tell I quite like it, can't you?
Yeah, I can.
I just think if I'm going to go through infertility, I want a squad on my on my side. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we all need a squad.
The squad. Yeah. And then that is it, because Professor Tim is still on his hollybobs.
Yeah.
And but that leaves us to say you should definitely follow us on the socials.
Oh, please do. You can follow us on Instagram.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can follow us on Twitter.
At Big Fat Negative.
Or you can email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
You can pre-order our book.
You can pre-order our book. What stage are we at now, Emma? It's quite weird that you can pre-order our book because it's kind of still being edited.
Yeah, it is.
So we've handed in the second version that we've made our edits to.
Yeah.
It's now gone to some very clever people.
Yeah.
Who are going to make it even better.
Who hopefully know a thing or two about science.
Yes. Well, yeah. Professor Tim's already read it, so yeah, it's obviously fucking shit hot. But it does feel mad that it's just like you can buy it even though it's not finished. You know
yeah,
I mean?
That's a bit mad.
It's crazy. Anyway, yeah. I've never written a book before, so this is a new world for me. you can also buy one of our t-shirts if you fancy it. They say "Just Relax" in really big letters, and I really like wearing mine.
Yeah. I wore mine the other day and felt quite proud.
Did you? Good.
Yeah.
So if you want to buy one of those, you can go to there's a link in our Big Fat Negative Instagram account on our link tree, they call it.
Yes, and also on our website.
And also on the website.
Yeah, which is bigfatnegative.com, where you can also find a link to pre-order the book.
You can find links coming out of everywhere.
Yeah.
Every orifice.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice, isn't it?
It's lovely.
Let's all just sit here and think about orifices for a minute.
Yeah. Okay. Think about some orifices. We'll leave you guys listen to Liz and Dr. Belinda, and we'll catch you at the other end.
Hi, friends. How are we doing? This week, we've been contacted by a lady all the way from Canada. So it's an international podcast, this one. And I don't normally read out the entirety of the question, but I think it's really important in this case. And while I wouldn't say that there's necessarily a trigger warning here, I would certainly say that this lady is being very brave and honest and probably voicing a lot of the things that we sometimes are afraid to speak openly. So this lady has been trying to conceive for about 3.5 years, and they've done 7 rounds of Letrozole and 3 rounds of IUI and are about to embark on their first round of IVF. And she writes, "I work as a paediatric nurse and I work with children who are severely ill and complex, ranging from severe autism, congenital heart disease, severe global development delays and extreme preemie babies who are born as young as 23 weeks. Lately, I've been really affected by the parents of these children I see their pain, anguish, trauma, stress. I see the devastation that comes from chronic and sometimes fatal diagnoses. With all of this in mind, is it worth it? Is everything we're doing to try and have children worth it when there can be so much pain and hardship that comes from having those children? How do you remind yourself through fertility treatments, disappointments, and the heartbreak that comes with trying to conceive that it's worth it? Do you ever worry that if you're able to have a baby, that you'll be able to handle it? I don't know if this is a precursor to me being a terrible parent. It can just be so hard to remind myself when I'm holding a parent in my arms while they sob that all the pain I'm dealing with now with infertility is worth it, even if it causes me more pain in the future. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. I mean, when I first read this, it really resonated with me, because I definitely have those feelings of, is this even worth it? And I don't even, you know, I don't have the same first-hand experiences as you do. So I cannot even imagine how challenging and difficult it must be to see this sort of sadness on a regular basis and then be dealing with your own struggles. But my first thought that came when I did sort of read your questions about, you know, is it worth it when there is all of this, potentially all of this sadness, or this sadness for these parents. And I can imagine that if you ask those parents, their answers would be absolutely yes, because while they have had to experience some absolutely devastating and just emotionally tumultuous times, they've also got to experience the joy that comes with having those children. And those small moments of joy, I would imagine, mean so very, very much in the darkness. I think for me, the only thing that I can sort of compare it to, I guess, is that I often feel that we have a really lovely life, Nick and I. We have some great friends, we have great family, and, you know, we have a beautiful home that we've worked hard for. We have careers that we both really enjoy. And I sometimes think to myself, gosh, do I really want this? And I don't know, maybe I'm being a bit too honest here, but sometimes I think that's necessary. I think to myself, am I only doing this because that's what society expects of me? It expects me to want to have a baby. It expects me to be maternal. Is that the reason why I'm driving this forward? And I don't know the answer to that, to be honest with you, but I do know that when I see my friends with their children, I do have that pang of envy. I do want to experience those things for myself. And I guess to some degree that is quite selfish, but I don't think that's wrong. I don't think that's a bad thing, and I don't think it makes me, you know, to have those concerns and those worries, I don't think it makes me a bad person. I think it makes me human. And I think on the same vein, you wondering those things and being immersed in that sadness and that devastation and that just really bleak world, which, can I just say as a complete aside, I think is so amazing that you put yourself out there like that, especially when going through the pain of infertility. But maybe because you're so surrounded by it, it's very difficult to see the light from it. I don't know if you do have those sorts of relationships with some of your patients or some of your patients' families, but I wonder whether or not it would be worth asking the question, is it worth it? And I'm pretty confident that they would put their hands on their hearts and say 100% yes. 100% yes. I think the other thing that you mentioned was that you were concerned that you were going to be a terrible parent. I think it's all really new. Like, if you get to that point, I think it's all really new. And from the clear care and love and dedication that you show to your patients, and the fact that you feel so, so deeply for them and you are so affected by it, I don't think you're going to be a terrible parent. I think that you are going to be, and I think you're going to drive all of those emotions and that love and that dedication that you show your patients into your own family. I wanted to speak about this today because I think, yeah, often we may have those dark thoughts of, not dark thoughts, that's not fair, honest thoughts about, is it worth it? You know, why are we putting ourselves through this when actually, A, we don't know what the outcome's going to be, and B, we don't even know what's on the other side. We don't even know what parenting looks like because we've never done it before. And so I think actually having that conversation and being able to openly say, of course I have those doubts. Of course I get worried. And of course I think, why on earth have I ploughed so much of my time and my effort and my money into this thing when I don't know what's on the other side of it? And I don't think there's any right or, you know, I don't think there's any one answer, but I think from the tone of your email and from everything that you give to your patients, for you, it's 100% going to be worth it. Because I think, you know, any child of yours would be lucky to be in your care and be parented by you. So I hope that helps. And as, you know, always, I don't have any sort of specific advice to give, but I can say that I've definitely had those thoughts. And I'm fairly 100% certain. I was going to say pretty certain, and then I thought, is that a bit non-committal? I am 100% certain that you will do your absolute best for any child that comes into your life. So I hope that helps. And I hope that your round is going well. And I hope that you're looking after yourself. Take great care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Linda, hello.
Hello, hi. Hi,
how
good evening.
How are you? Are you okay?
Good, thank you. Yes, I'm thank you. How are you?
I'm okay. We've just had quite a stressful time trying to get on the stupid recording software.
But you stuck it out, Belinda, and that's why we love you.
Made it.
We're all together now.
We start every single episode of the podcast by asking people about their journey. Can you tell us about yours?
My journey began back in 2010. I have a history of endometriosis. Okay. And I was on actually kind of like a double whammy of treatment of the pill and the head of the Myrina, the intrauterine coil.
Okay.
So I was having using kind of the combination, and I had been having problems with my endometriosis, and I'd had an operation the year before. Mm-hmm. And so I was on that double therapy, and as I came off that therapy, I think within 6 months, I had a huge blood cyst, we'll call it cyst, a sack full of blood.
Okay.
That just kind of ruptured, and and so I had to have surgery on my ovary. It's interesting because actually I was in hospital for 5 days in pain, and actually I was quite ignored during that period of time, so we ended up having to go to a different hospital.
Self-discharging.
It was a horrible story, maybe for another day, but it was as a result I had this ovarian surgery, so I think that's probably where it actually began, because that affected that later on that came to affect my AMH. So initially started off, actually it was all fine. I thought, oh, this is great. After a year, I became pregnant. It was just like bang dot a year. I'm kind of 90% of population. This is great.
Yeah.
And then I had a miscarriage at was it just 6 weeks? So that was my first miscarriage, miscarriage. So I kind of haven't really been expecting it, even though I'm a doctor. I've worked in obs and gyne. I used to work in the early pregnancy unit. I started bleeding, but I just thought, I'm just going to go as a precaution. I didn't really expect it, and so I had that for the first miscarriage. And then I didn't conceive I didn't even have a period for 6 months after that. And then I didn't conceive again until I had IVF treatment. Was it a year and a half later?
Okay.
And then sadly I had that second miscarriage. So that was another missed miscarriage. And then I had quite a few cycles of IVF. And actually I didn't conceive again for another 2 years, which I conceived naturally, so twice in 1 year, and both times it was really good because I had a heartbeat, so I saw a heartbeat in both of those pregnancies, but I still lost the pregnancies. And then after that I didn't become pregnant again, even though you had a few more cycles. So I think in total I had 9 IVF cycles.
Wow, Belinda.
Lots of steroids, lots of intralipid therapies, lots of lots of different types of treatment, different clinics. It's been a whirlwind roller coaster of difficulties, it's been painful. In the last couple of years we have been trying for surrogacy to take that journey. I decided that adoption, actually I think both of us didn't really want to pursue adoption, although we did try initially.
It's such a hard decision.
It is. It just didn't feel right for me. It really doesn't. And my husband wasn't keen really in the first place. Even the surrogacy journey hasn't been so easy. Journeys are easy, and none of them are really the kind of first choice really, but we are where we are, which is at the moment just kind of still hoping and wondering every day whether when this will actually happen.
Oh my god, that is quite the story. So just to kind of go a step ahead, then you started your trusted squad. Can you tell us about that?
I'm a GP with a background, and I have always, you know, seen, I started off training in obstetrics and gynecology and sexual health. And because of my background in women's health, I would, in general practice, I would do the contraception, I would counsel for maybe termination of pregnancy, I'd do the 6-week checks for the young babies, I'd see the mums for postnatal checks. So pretty much as always looking after patients, you know, people that were having children, people that are having families. And I suppose that there were times when it was hard, it was particularly hard.
It must be unbelievably hard.
I suppose, especially when kind of hear of the patients that didn't, you know, that became pregnant almost without trying, or that didn't want to become pregnant. I think those are probably the hardest. Sometimes I'd just be so confused and just wonder why. Why this doesn't make sense. So I suppose that's always been part of my, you know, my working career has been helping, you know, looking after patients, looking after people. Mm-hmm. So with your trusted squad, originally I started off writing the blog with a view. My background is I am GP, but I also have background in digital health and providing my subject matter expertise and kind of in compliance and quality, making sure that services are safe, that thinking about what we call patient experience and general safety. And I also did that a lot in digital health. So I would work in kind of the virtual services for GP practices and for some of the digital health startups. And so I started just writing about the kind of gadgets and about the online services that people could use, particularly for women, to help improve their health and just to help them be able to, to be empowered, to be able to actively monitor and know where to find the right trusted resources. I'd been interviewing quite a number of mums and then it became women who were experiencing infertility to just find out what kind of issues that they were dealing with. And actually I did realise that a lot of people were having difficulty just knowing they're feeling very overwhelmed by a lot of information. So much information, not really sure what to trust. And so that's partly why I started writing the blog. And then as I was doing more and more work, some other things happened to me personally. My endometriosis got a lot worse. Reminded me a lot more of what I was going through in infertility, and I just became more drawn to wanting to do more in the infertility space. And it was odd because I didn't even know at the time that there was, like, that I didn't use Instagram, so I didn't know there's this whole community on Instagram. I actually first heard your podcast, I think, in 2018. So long, long time ago. But actually, I had kind of, you know, tried to, I guess, in a way, distance myself. I don't know whether that was in that time I lost my mum. There were lots of other things that happened. I just felt I needed some space, but it just felt so right that I needed to. It feels like a calling, actually. It feels like I need to help, you know, other people. I've had these experiences and I have this expertise and I have so much knowledge about healthcare and about how services work and about how to find the right information and about how and about what it's like to live with infertility. And I have networks at kind of very senior level, so this just seemed to just fit, and that's why I've set up the Fertility Concierge Service. I came up with the idea in December, and
I love it,
and soft launched it in February. It just felt so right, and it really helped me get through a difficult time of the endometriosis. It was like, it was exciting and it just felt, yeah. Felt
really nothing like a bit of a distraction. I think that's why we set up this podcast, basically, just as a distraction from going through IVF.
Yes.
So, I mean, you describe yourself as a infertility concierge. I mean, how does that differ from like an infertility doula or a coach?
So this particular service is run by me with some admin support. And so I, with a doula, a doula will provide some advocacy work and also provide support. What my role is also providing support and providing is a kind of additional layer of kind of, I suppose, expertise and experience in that, so I understand a lot about the clinical side. I've been trained, obviously, in attend Royal College of obstetrician gynecologists and BFS training, but also it's a matter of providing a personalized plan, really delving into what's happened, what services are available, thinking about mind and body. There's just so much emotion in this whole process. It's really tough, and I do find that a lot of women maybe neglect the mental health side as a
GP, are you able to refer people?
Yes, that's part of the service. So what it is I mean, those kind of recommendations as to what kind of different services. It's not just, sometimes you may need a fertility clinic, but actually you don't always need fertility treatments as your first port of call. And sometimes you may need to see a gynecologist, or you might need to see your partner, might need to see a urologist, or
thank God for you. Because everyone just gets, people just get sent straight to the fertility clinic, right?
Yeah.
So many times things could be investigated at least further if they went to a different specialist.
Exactly. And obviously that people may need fertility treatment down the line, and you do want to become pregnant as soon as possible. But once you go down the IVF route, it does become so difficult, so physically and emotionally draining and challenging. And with each treatment, your chances, particularly kind of after the three cycles, do kind of diminish. And it's just a matter of optimizing or doing what you can to optimize your health and make sure that you are supported in making sure you're doing the right things, even in terms of timing sex. I mean, I just find it really sad that there's so much pressure to kind of use lots of apps and hormonal and strips, etc., and then all this pressure to kind of really understand your body in a few weeks, and then time sex, and then how do you know that you're doing it right if you haven't kind of really got used to it and really taken some time? That's what I try and encourage, part of my blogs and on the social media, for people to start learning about understanding their body at a much earlier age, and then they maybe won't feel that pressure if they did, come to this point. But actually, there are still so many other things that could be looked at, and maybe many couples aren't getting that support at the early stages, when they're just trying in the first year and the first 2 years. So it's covering infertility. The fertility concierge service covers infertility and general fertility, trying to conceive. And then the other additional thing is just providing the kind of admin support.
The admin.
There's so much
IVF admin.
Exactly. And so, really the service is aiming to take a lot of that off the hands. So to be able to arrange those appointments and to be able to help with the prescriptions and to be able to help, just help make generally the whole process a lot less stressful than it is.
I love the name because it feels like your trusted squad. It's quite energized. Like you guys, you know, a lot of the infertility world can be quite softly, you know, whereas you're like your trusted squad. We're the, you know, the superheroes that you need to get this shit done. I love it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I never intended to be like knocking the door down, kicking the door down, going, "Hey, I'm here with my gun."
That's what you need, though. Sometimes you need someone to walk in, like slam open the door, stand in a power stance, and demand something.
But yeah, the name is really, again, when I was interviewing women, it just became apparent that actually. Everybody has their kind of individual small circle of people that they trust, and that may include a family member, often includes a family member, close friends. And these are people that they'll go to and get their advice. And, you know, some people have the experience and some people don't, but they trust them. And so that's part of what, you know, that's part of why I just called it your trusted squad, was that the intention was that I would be part of that trusted circle. And they felt that they could come to me.
That's great.
Can I like change the energy completely right now and pick up on something that you said right at the beginning, which was you mentioned there that, you know, you were in hospital with endometriosis and a blood-filled sac had ruptured and your pain was being ignored. And Belinda, I think every Black woman we've had on this podcast has said something quite similar. Is there a problem with institutional racism in the NHS? Is that why you think you were ignored?
It's interesting. At the time, I didn't. It wasn't on my mind, but I couldn't understand why it was happening because I was being treated like I was a drug addict, and what? I hadn't. That's what it felt like, because what had happened was I had been in hospital for quite a few days and I was in a lot of pain. And I'd asked the nurse, I didn't see a consultant in any of those days. It was really odd. And so I was just sitting in the room kind of just by myself. And then I asked the nurse for some painkillers and she said that there wasn't a doctor available. And this is a major teaching hospital in central London. So I was like, and I worked in a different major teaching hospital in Opposite Gynae. So I know they normally have two registrars on call. So I said, but that can't be possible. How can there not be a doctor available? Not in the hospital is what she said. There isn't a doctor in the hospital.
There isn't a doctor in the hospital.
It was really odd.
That's a bad hospital.
Yeah, exactly. It just didn't make sense. So what I did was I called the switchboard and told them I was a doctor and I needed to speak to them about a patient. And then I got put through and then I spoke to the registrar and I said, well, I'm a patient here on the ward and I'm in a lot of pain. And nobody's been to see me. Can you come and see me? And so I was given some, morphine by that doctor that night and that made such a difference. And the next day I felt like I was so much better and I was got up to wash and I felt like I could go home. But then because I'd been moving and I had this peritonitis, so I had blood in my,
my
pelvis. Yeah. So I got into pain again. And when I kept ringing the bell for painkillers, they kept switching off the bell and then leaving me.
God.
And so after 2.5 hours, my friend had driven from Amersham, and my husband came and they wheeled me out of the hospital because I was in so much pain and just crying. My husband called private hospitals. We were just that desperate. We just thought we'd just put it on credit cards and literally just get the help that I needed because I just had no confidence in that. And then I ended up having the surgery. There was about 0.5 liter of blood in my pelvis. So it was really, it was an awful experience. It's difficult to know whether it was because I was Black. I know that, I know that I was I wasn't treated in the same way as I would have been had I been a doctor. I wasn't dressed in the same way as I would be. If I was at work, I didn't look well. I was weaker. I couldn't stand up for myself in the same way that I would be able to. I couldn't even stand up, to be honest. So I'm not sure whether it was racism or whether it was just how maybe sometimes weaker people are treated. But I did feel that with all my knowledge and my background, that if I could be treated that way, then how would other people who had no idea what was going on be treated?
Did you make a complaint? You
know, I started. Mm. I wrote a 12-page letter and I just cried and I cried and I closed the laptop and I didn't send it. It was really odd. I was upset. I was traumatized by the whole experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it took quite a few years to really recover from it. So my intention was to complain, but it just felt so painful. And it's actually after that I became a medical director and I started dealing with patient safety and patient experience. And I always ask myself, you know, what would have happened if I had made that complaint? And I have had other incidences where I have, you know, I've been to A&E with pain and been turned away when I was pregnant. Mm. And I've made numerous complaints ever since. It's a tricky one because the resolution, I don't know, it just doesn't seem to make that much of a difference.
It's true. And also, you know, I've definitely been in situations where I should have complained but didn't. And it's because you are having to, when you're having to write something like that, you're having to relive a trauma. Mm. And it's horrible.
You need a lot of energy.
That's exactly it. A lot of energy. And then remember, still trying to conceive in all of this time. So it's, and then having the miscarriages, and then my mum had cancer. And so there were so many other variables that were happening.
Yeah.
And I was still trying to kind of maintain this outward, exterior of I'm doing really well as a sport director and medical director, I don't want to lose my job, but I don't need you to know that I'm, you know, having problems with infertility and recurrent miscarriages. So, but at that time there was more I could have done if I had felt, had the strength, I suppose. And I do find that some people have different types of strength, don't they? And that kind of resilience.
Some people just have the rage that
time,
keeps going.
I just felt,
but sometimes you. I
was studying for an MBA. I was doing an MBA and working full time. Yeah. So there was a lot going on.
Somebody said to me today, "Don't get bitter, get better." And that feels like what you did, because you're like, okay, I'll start my own thing and I'll help people that are in my position, and like that'll be the fuck you, you know?
Yes, exactly. And that's it. That I just feel that there's lots that I know and that I can help help people. I don't want to say maneuver the system, but there is a lot of maneuvering to do.
There definitely is, yeah. There's a lot of standing up for yourself and pushing people to do.
Exactly.
Do you think that, because endometriosis comes up a lot, and this is obviously this is quite well spoken about now, but the kind of just the lack of care and attention that goes into endometriosis and the kind of the way it gets overlooked, do you think things are improving?
I only think that there is more awareness about endometriosis, but it does sound like the lived experience isn't necessarily changing. The part of the problem is that the NHS is so overstretched, and the waiting lists are so long. And it can take, over a year to get an appointment. And so it's not necessarily that that the doctors aren't doing the right thing, although many people are having difficulties to even trying to get past the first hurdle. which shouldn't be a hurdle, but it just does sometimes, you know, become a hurdle. But then once you're in the system, you're kind of waiting to be seen, and then you have one appointment, and then you have a scan, and then you have to wait another 6 months to be seen again, or the appointment might get cancelled. So it's part of a systemic issue as well. So I think when people are having treatment, that there is more guidance about it, and there's more knowledge about it. But I'm not sure whether the service is necessarily better overall.
Yeah,
it's just so slow to change these things, isn't it? Like, you know, any kind of change. I guess that's why I've been writing at work a bit about the response to COVID and how lightning fast it was compared to anything the NHS has ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe that's a lesson we can learn from COVID.
Yes, but then what's also happened is that they had to make priorities, you know, and once you have your priorities, there are other things that have to take a lesser priority, and we don't have enough kind of resource to make everything a priority, unfortunately. And I think that's why so many digital health companies are being set up to try and solve these problems, to try and help, you know, to help kind of improve access to care and provide improved support at an earlier stage. So I think that's what so many of the kind of entrepreneurs that I've met, you know, they're really trying to, and even doctors that are working in digital health, that are trying to just work outside of the system to just try and help the system, you know, trying to help the NHS. I don't know how much, you know, more capacity NHS really does have. So unfortunately, that's a reality.
Yeah. It's about, what is it? Somebody really boring said to me recently, it's about working smarter. Yeah,
that's true. And then there's so many moving parts, and the NHS is so big.
It's a thorny issue. Yeah, it's a big one.
But I don't want it to sound sad. And you know, there, it's you know, there are a lot of, you know, really passionate and good doctors, and you know, healthcare professionals. And when services do work, they do work really well. You know, and I do think that with the help of you know, with some of these external companies, that actually we will see so much improvement. And you know, I think even what you're doing in terms of raising awareness, it's just there's just so much more now to help all of us, to be honest. So that didn't exist when I first started my fertility journey.
Same, to be honest.
It has come along leaps and bounds, for sure.
Since 2015 is when I started. Belinda, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
It's been really nice to chat.
Thank you for having me.
Are we football hooligans now?
I think we haven't got it out of our system yet. Clearly. No. Putting a fucking flare up my arse and getting photographed wasn't enough hooliganism for me last week.
When the Sun found that guy, I felt they so proud. Him. They found him, and they've apparently paid him £11,000 for his story.
Oh, wow.
And I just felt so proud of British journalism. Yeah, his story.
Lots of twists and turns in that one then.
Yeah. It just made me so happy. It's like a random guy. There's a picture of a random guy with a flare up his ass, and they tracked him down. And
that's journalism.
Journalism.
That is journalism.
Just glorious.
I need to find that. I haven't seen it. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah. There was also a really good column by a guy who used to be a football hooligan in the Sunday Times.
Oh wow. Okay.
Or maybe just the Times. I can't remember.
Okay, all the papers are like, let's hear it from the hooligans.
Yeah, it's great. Makes me really happy. Proud of being British, proud of being a journalist.
Oh, good times. Yeah. Next week we'll be back, as always, with the fabulous Sophie Martin, aka the infertile midwife.
Yeah, and she's telling us about her story because she's had, you know, quite a hard time. That's an understatement, a very hard time. But also she's talking about what it's like to have a job where you're dealing with babies and new mums every day.
Mm-hmm.
like how you do that, how you balance kind of going through fertility treatment, struggling to conceive with
that day job.
Yeah.
We've had quite a few messages of people talking about that kind of thing, so we thought it'd be interesting to speak to Sophie about it. So yeah, that's one for next week.
All right, see you then.
Stay safe.
Bye.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.